Every time you tell a Raptors fan what pain is, we learn that there is a new level of pain, that there is an even deeper and darker pain, and this team continues to find it. Welcome to Free Association. I'm J.D. Bunkus. He is Donovan Bennett. It is a night of hurt. It is a night of sorrow.
The Raptors' new alternate logo is a sad face emoji.
Yeah, the crying Jordan face might get replaced by Lowry and DeRozan at a podium, and everyone might just know what that means after a Cavs series.
Or Drake nervous face.
Yeah, oh boy, Drake was nervous.
Fourth quarter Drake face was not good today.
All right, let's break it all down.
Well. Raptors are notorious. Ain't no team can't bang with us. DeRozan, Lowry, violent, you know. Whole squad representing with the Northern Touch. Yo, why you think you can handle us? Ain't no team can't bang with us. Rousing, Lowry, Valance, you know. Raptors coming down with the Northern. Chicky Touch, Biggie, baby. Check the
lingo. I'm having difficulty even knowing where to begin with this because this was painful. I think that this was, I think out of all the Raptors losses I've ever watched, this one probably hurts the fan base the most. Would you not agree with that?
Do you remember what it was like to get swept by Washington, to get punked?
Yeah, but
to have your team quit?
Yeah, this is different. I don't think that the expectations were that high. I don't think that people have been as familiar with these players. They've seen this story before. The Raptors came out just guns a-blazing against the Cleveland Cavaliers, just ran them into the ground in the first quarter. You look like, okay, things are going to be different. Tough second, but the third JV takes over. But then down the stretch, I got a lot of text messages, same old Raptors. And while there were some things I liked from this game and that we're going to discuss over the next hour, it's really hard to push back against those texts or those tweets, which again, we're seeing. What else is new? That's pathetic. That's not great. Most embarrassing game in Raptors history if they lose. Typical Raptors. They're scared. Raps are mentally scared of LeBron and Cleveland. Same old Raps. That's the stuff that's coming in across the feed. And again, I don't know how to say to people that that's not the case. Because this is a team that had a very winnable game in front of them. To the point where in the final seconds of the game, they had four opportunities to just end the game right there. Fred VanVleet has a wide open three. He bricks it. Goes right to DeMar DeRozan. Maybe he rushes it a little bit, but ultimately he had a clean look and it pops in and out. CJ Miles gets it. He puts it up. Doesn't go in. Jonas Valanciunas, the 7-footer who dominated in the third and completely lost his game, his offensive touch in the fourth quarter. He can't hit the bunny. Goes to overtime. And I think Cleveland hit their shots. Toronto played some good defense. But ultimately, once again, you get a fairly clean look at an open shot, and it's a lot of the same themes. LeBron James comes for you. His supporting cast nails a bunch of threes. Cavaliers outside of LeBron, their three-point shooters were 52% tonight. And when the Raptors had big opportunities in multiple spots to hit those same threes, they missed them. 0-for-11 on their final 11 shots. One field goal in the final 5 minutes. The ball stopped moving. The head started dropping. The offense just looked like a complete cluster. They're just like the final few moments of the game is like when people say the Raptors play scared and people say that Cleveland lives in their heads and that LeBron James is the boogeyman. Like after a game like that, like what's the pushback? What are you supposed to say?
We talked before this series that there's a couple things they needed to do, and if they did them, they would win. They need to dominate inside, impose their will, especially when the Cavs go small. They needed to run the Cavs off the three-point line and not let anyone else get off for the Cavaliers. LeBron was going to get his because he's the greatest player of the generation. You can't let the others get involved. The others got involved tonight in a big way. And although they used that size and used JV to build that 14-point lead, they weren't able to continue to capitalize on it late. Jakob Poeltl didn't really give you much as the backup center.
Oh, come on. You can't be starting with Jakob Poeltl. Like, DeMar DeRozan and Kyle Lowry had 19 points between them in the first quarter, and they had 14 points between them in the last three quarters.
Well, like, if you let me finish, Pirtle had 4 points and six rebounds. JV, although he started well, and although you look at the box score and it says he had 21 and 21, most of that was early work, and not much of that was against Tristan Thompson. And Tristan Thompson, when he guarded Jonas Valanciunas in this series a year ago, held him to less than a point per shot. And as soon as Ty Lue figured out, you know what, maybe I shouldn't have Jeff Green guarding Jonas.
Maybe, or Kevin Love.
Maybe my rugged center who does a good job cleaning the glass, maybe he would be the answer to the guy who had the same amount of rebounds at the end of the first quarter as the rest of his team. And when Ty Lue kind of stumbled into that decision, the game changed from there. Especially when the Cavs play small, the Raptors need to dominate the five position, at least offensively anyways. And they didn't do that tonight. You think that in their bench unit that Jakob would be able to have a field day. That wasn't the case. And JV, although he did, again, if you look at the box score, you're going to think, wow, 21 and 21 and 34, the first Raptor ever to have more than 15 and 15 in a game. He broke a franchise record. That's great. But he had the game on his fingertips multiple times late and wasn't able to secure it. I think that's the biggest takeaway for me.
Yeah, it's too bad that the Raptors couldn't translate Jonas Valanciunas to the fourth. I wondered a little bit as to how much of it was potentially fatigue, because he did really carry that team all the way through the third quarter. He was dominant. His third quarter with 13 points. They tried going with Kevin Love on him. It worked to no avail. He was either getting offensive rebounds, putting home bunnies, or going to the free throw line. Like, that's all he was doing all quarter long. And the Raptors, for moments, tried to run the offense through him in the fourth quarter and continued to try that. But I think he finished the quarter 1 of 6. Like, he just didn't have the same touch around the basket. He missed a few wide open looks. It wasn't the same. It wasn't the same from Jonas Valanciunas. And the same, and similarly on the glass, I think you're right. Tristan Thompson in this game was the turning point. He was the Sportsnet game changer, if you wanna put it that way. He came in and Tristan Thompson finished with 9 offensive rebounds in that game. Like, he was just a terror. They could not keep him off the glass. He started limiting Jonas Valanciunas' offense. He guarded a whole bunch of different guys. He took away the paint, which the Raptors were getting to early and often. And it's funny because we spent so much of the season discussing, you know, who was going to have to change their game for who, right? Like, we spent so much time. Well, what are the Raptors going to do? Can they play JV? Are they going to have to go small and try to match the Cavaliers small? And in the end, it was the Cavaliers and Ty Lue who came around to trying to play the Raptors brand of basketball, going a little bit bigger, pushing Kevin Love to the four, having Thompson go at the five, and beating up the Raptors bigs. Because when Toronto got those opportunities, and even to start the second half, it was what? It was Ibaka or JV. Like, those two guys were getting their points. Those two guys were getting deep post position. They were getting clean looks. Tristan Thompson swung this game around. He played excellent in game 7. And he's going to be a massive X factor in this series. You would think that a guy who had the season that he had, who has played the way he has over the last calendar year, would be a welcome addition to the floor. But he was awesome. He played with energy. He played great defense. Again, he got all over the glass. He made his free throws, and it wasn't a ton of them, but he made the ones he needed to make. He's perfect from the line tonight. Yeah, 11 boards, 14 points for Tristan Thompson. And all of this in... after basically sitting the majority of the third quarter while the Raptors continued to feast and Ty Lue didn't do anything about it. So, yeah, it's going to be interesting to see how Valanciunas adjusts to this. I still think that he's the better player in the matchup. But, yeah, man, I look at that offense late and say that was a big part of it. Like, it can't just fall on one player in this game. The Raptors are a deep team, and there wasn't even the one guy who stepped up in the fourth. Like, who would you say was the best player in the Raptors in the fourth quarter? Like, was OG Anunoby playing defense on LeBron James?
Probably, to be honest. I mean, No one was good offensively. They were 0 for 11 in the last 4-15 in regulation to end the game. The offense wasn't much better in overtime. And it's not even... I was surprised Tristan Thompson didn't start the game after he saved your season in game 7. But they wanted George Hill in the starting lineup. They wanted to be able to guard Lowry on the perimeter, fair enough. Obviously, I think he's going to start game two after this performance. But we talk about Kevin Love and his ability to stretch the floor and how difficult he is to guard. Now that's going to be a matchup problem for the Raptors' bigs, specifically Jonas Valanciunas. I thought Toronto did a good job on him. He only scored 7 points tonight, only hit 1-3. But he grabbed 13 rebounds. And we forget that when he was a Timberwolf, he was a star by grabbing rebounds and starting their break. And the inability to close possessions and get rebounds, whether it was Tristan on the offensive glass or Kevin Love chipping in with 13 as well, I think despite the 21 that JV brought down, was a big issue for them, especially late in the game. And again, the other issue we talked about is, well, this team, if not for LeBron, they can't score. And the way he gets others involved is penetration and kicking out for threes. So if he's going to have to score 120 points to beat you, fair enough. But you can't let the other guys get off and get in rhythm, because that hurts you not only when he's on the court, but then they've got the rhythm for when he's off the court. And after he just played a series where none of his teammates scored 20 points in the entire series, the first time that's happened to him in his career, you come out game one and J.R. Smith, 20 points. LeBron, you kept him to 26. You think that's a win? Kyle Korver with 19. And obviously, you know, Tristan was 14. A lot of that was junk plays and free throws. And then, okay, well, how did Korver, how did JR get their points? They both hit 5 threes. Because if those guys aren't hitting from three, they're not scoring. Yeah. And so it sounds simple, but if you stay home on those guys and deter them from shooting threes, they can't score, thus they can't beat you. And I think that's the frustrating part. It's not just that they lost, not just that they blew a double-digit lead, not just that the lead should have been bigger, is that there were very simple ways that you could have avoided this outcome. And there was really only two ways for the Cavs to get back into the game, and that's the way they did. I think that's the disappointing part, is because the blueprint was there.
Yeah, Kevin Love, 3 of 13 tonight. Imagine I told you these statistics before the game started. Hey, man, Kevin Love's going to be 3 of 13 with 7 points. And LeBron James is going to be 12 of 30, 1 of 8 from 3. And he's going to have his 13. He's going to have 26 and 13. But you would have said, okay. I would have showed you the tape of OG Anunoby, who, I mean, if there's one thing to take away from this game, is that OG Anunoby is not scared. That while a lot of the Toronto Raptors players folded in the fourth quarter, and there's no other way of putting it. Like, they choked. They choked that game away, and their star players didn't do anything. Like, again, DeMar DeRozan, Kyle Lowry, 14 points through three of the three final quarters. Just nothing. The only field goal that DeMar DeRozan had in the fourth quarter was off of a broken inbounds play where he snaked his way to the basket. Like, he and Lowry looked completely broken. Neither of them really could do anything. Some just sloppy sets, like turning the ball over, like not getting an inbounds play. Even having, like, after putting a timeout, coming out of a timeout, not being able to inbounds the basketball, getting a 5 second call, like just sloppy, just really sloppy plays. But the one guy who I really didn't think folded tonight and who really stepped up and played big moments and was just consistent whistle to whistle was OG Anunoby. This kid came out and gave him 30 minutes. He played more than Serge Ibaka tonight. And I think that part of what held LeBron James to 12 of 30, a big part of it was OG Anunoby fighting through screens all night long, not letting LeBron James establish deep post position, right? Because once LeBron James is on the block and you're in isolation, like, help's coming or he's cooking you. But if he's catching the ball away from the basket, you have a chance. And OG Anunoby played well enough to give the Raptors a chance for large portions of this game. Like, I thought he played with real heart and he played with real guts. And he finished with, what was it, 7 points? I don't think he scored in the, yeah, he finished with 7 points. He hit one of his three threes, which is usually what you ask from him from the series. Like, you don't want him to shrink, and still does this thing where if you turn your head on him and you completely leave him at the three-point line, he'll cut to the basket and be a wide-open outlet. But outside of OG and outside of third quarter, like, I'll take out the first quarter because everyone was pretty brilliant in the first. But outside of OG, wire to wire, like, consistently through that entire game, Tough to find a Raptor who didn't shrink in big moments. And I will take the pressure a little bit off Fred VanVleet, because again, I thought that he gave them a gutsy effort, and I know he missed the two big threes at the end of the game. or at the end of both periods, the fourth quarter and overtime. But you were noticing it a lot that he was favoring the shoulder. It looked like he bumped it in a transition play at one point, and it never really looked comfortable. But I got to say, just finishing my thought on OG, I don't think I've ever felt better about OG Anunoby. Like, he's had a lot of great moments as a rookie, and he's given you a lot of reason to believe that he can grow as a player. But out of all, like, I guess the real only positive from tonight that I can really come away with is that I've never felt better about what the ceiling of this player is, especially defensively. And I know LeBron's tired, and there's excuses to be made for LeBron James fans. But after the last two matchups that we saw where OG really couldn't hang with LeBron, and LeBron shot over 62% against OG, to see what we saw tonight from the rookie was really, really impressive.
And a lot of people thought, oh, LeBron's pulling a Kaiser Soche. He's not really tired. Come on. I think he's tired.
Mm-hmm.
One of six from the free throw line, one of eight from three. That's your legs. To me, that means that you're tired. And he got to the rim a little bit. But when we had the backhaul here at Sportsnet, so we could watch the interactions in between whistles, in between commercial breaks. And I said to you during the broadcast, as he was huffing and puffing and trying to speak, you know, when you're so tired, you're trying to speak, and you can't even really get the words out. That's what he looked like on the bench. And I think OG did a good job of just giving him body punches.
Yeah.
Just continuing to take his legs away from him, make him work for everything, make him pound the basketball, and hopefully over the course of a series and a game, that attrition kind of continues to pick up and pick up and pick up. Again, 26 for LeBron. You'll take that on most nights. He still had a triple-double. Like, well, don't get me wrong. He was still brilliant. 26, 11, and 13. But I think he had to work for those 26. They were in a quiet 26. OG did a good job. And I think if you're going to watch this game back, or if you're going to do the
game in an hour. Oh, I don't think very many people are going to do that, Doug.
And really look at what went wrong.
Too many.
I think what is instructive is going to be overtime. Because this was the chance. You got some new sets. You had 36 hours of prep before they did. You rested. You hit them with a quick punch early. You steal game one. You see how they react. Then you go to their place for game three and four.
Mm.
But by the end of this game, it was virtually game two. Like, both sides have felt each other out. The Cavs had taken the Raptors' best punch and hung around and punched back. And so that overtime, I think, was indicative of what the rest of this series is going to be like. So now what? You've played your best card. You've had the rest and the prep. You had home court. That was stolen from you. So now what is the response? What is the response emotionally, but also what is the response schematically now with the Cavs knowing exactly who you are as a basketball team?
Again, going back to what we discussed in the final of the Wizards series about trying to put ghosts behind you and trying to play unafraid and believing in things like clutch, I look at the play of, I'm sorry, but I do look at the play of DeMar DeRozan a little differently than Kyle Lowry's. I know that both of them shrunk. Neither of them really contributed. Lowry, like some awful turnovers. He had four of them. DeMar had two. But when you look at this game, I think that the main thing that you point to is, okay, there was moments where, you know, the cultural reset and trusting in others, it happened because DeMar found Fred VanVleet for a really good pass at the end of that game, right? And they found Serge Ibaka in the corner right before that, and he missed a wide open three. And really, the Raptors, like, the only thing that really stopped them from that huge self-implosion was LeBron James jumping underneath the leg of Serge Ibaka, which is absolutely a foul and is a dirty play. But I think that tonight, in terms of if anyone is going to have to reflect on this, because you can look at some things like Serge needs to be better, clearly 0 of 3 from 3, missed some just very clean looks, didn't play very well for the vast majority of this game, gave them a couple of good minutes at the beginning of the third quarter, and then some decent minutes closing, but that mostly just defensively. Raptors play good defense for large stretches, like for good stretches of this game, got stops when the ball stopped moving for Cleveland in an isolation. And again, a lot because of OG Anunoby. Like, we're looking at the highlight reel right now. Even some of the shots LeBron hit over OG were really, really tough in this game.
But they were mid-range, though.
Yeah.
He kills you at the rim, not to interrupt, and from three. And he forced them to a lot of mid-range shots, mm-hmm. which LeBron has added to his game, but they're still, from a degree of difficulty standpoint, much tougher. And I thought OG played the scouting report smart.
So I don't put a lot of – I know, again, Valanciunas wasn't nearly as good as he was in the third quarter, and there was a lot of bunnies he missed, and he didn't have quite the same touch as we touched on. But I look at this game, and I have a hard time pointing the finger at anyone other than the two star players of this team. Because, again, DeRozan had some moments. Like, the block on Kevin Love was really nice. Like, it really was.
Mm-hmm.
He looked like he would be coming out of the funk every once in a while. Like, you'd be looking at him and saying, okay, here it comes. Finally, DeRozan's going to do something. And he just never could. And I don't know how I'm assessing their play in the fourth, because they just looked uncomfortable. And it just looked like, you know, the Raptors, we've criticized them for this before. We've criticized them for this before about how they get into their actions really late. And I thought that was happening a lot in the fourth quarter, like a lot of dribbling, a lot of waiting around, a lot of people standing, nobody moving away from the ball. And then what did it become? It became a lot of DeMar DeRozan dribbling the air of the basketball while four other guys stood around. And guess what? That hasn't worked. And it hasn't worked in the past, and it doesn't work now. And he and Kyle Lowry, for multiple possessions late, looked shook. And I don't think that you have a meltdown like that where in the final 5 minutes you have the one field goal and it's DeRozan on a broken play without mostly pointing the blame at those two guys tonight.
Yeah, I mean, I did think he kicked it twice to Fred for open threes that if they go in, we're probably saying that is the culture reset identified right there.
I still don't think that we would look at this performance by either of these players and say that's enough, right?
Well, like, I think it's funny. We're talking a lot about the fourth quarter and closing the game, and I almost feel like, in a weird way, this game was lost in the second quarter. Like, were you against this team, against this player, you need to give yourself a buffer. And you're telling me that going into the half, DeMar has 15 points on 7 of 10 shooting. Kyle has 10 and 6. LeBron has 11 points, and you're up 3? Like, there were stretches, whether it was the turnovers or it was just some odd decision-making and some quick breakdowns on defense, that you could have stretched that lead that was 14 to 20 to 23 to 24. And then a group who, if some believe, are mental midgets and choke late, then a group at least has some wiggle room, and then they can play as front runners. And, you know, there's that boxing term, you can't just beat the champ, you have to knock the champ out. I feel like they almost had to knock the champ out.
See, to me, the third was more discouraging, that JV put up what he did, and the Raptors stretched the lead once again to double digits. And it looked like they had all the momentum, and then all of a sudden in comes Tristan Thompson, and all of a sudden there's some breakdowns and some threes. And, man, Kyle Korver, I'll tell you what, what did he finish with? Because his night was pretty nice. He finished with a lot of points, 19 points, but he was 5 of 12 from 3. And how many of those misses was he just, like, wide open where there wasn't anybody within a few feet of him? Like, Kyle Korver could have even done more damage tonight. And I thought the Raptors got fortunate with some of that. So, yeah, to win the quarter by 2 points after JV had one of the best quarters in Raptors playoff history, yeah, I thought that was really discouraging. But there were so many moments, again, in the fourth quarter where the Raptors had a 5-point lead, and they would get possession, and they weren't able to stretch that lead out from larger than 5. And again, it goes back to the same thing that we've heard before. Like, we can point to those final two plays where DeRozan kicked it. But for the most part, the ball stopped moving. It stuck to people. DeRozan was over-dribbling. Kyle Lowry was not getting free, and nobody was moving off the ball, and veterans didn't hit big shots like Serge Ibaka and Jonas Valanciunas. So I don't look at that as I view that very much under the same lens as the Wizards game 4, where the Raptors crumbled late, and it's still something, it's still a hurdle for this franchise, and that DeRozan and those wine uniforms, like, they act as the boogeyman for this team.
And I think moving forward, you mentioned, how many times is Kyle Korver going to miss all those shots? I mean, how many times is LeBron going to shoot 16% from the free throw line? It's not going to happen again. How many times is Jordan Clarkson going to play again in this series? He might not.
I wouldn't play him ever.
So you're not going to have that minus 6 in 12 minutes. Larry Nance Jr. didn't play at all. I could see him
There's
playing.
There's no need for him to.
Who?
Larry Nance Jr.
But I think the Cavs kind of figure out we don't have to go small against.
Yeah, that's what we're saying. It's like you don't have to go small against the Raptors. You can possibly beat them big. And you get that from Tristan Thompson. I mean, it reminded me of the first Cavs run into the finals when they lost everybody and Tristan Thompson was the second best player before he got paid. That looked like pre-getting paid, pre-Kardashian Tristan Thompson was out there tonight. I don't think he responded very well to getting booed by the hometown crowd.
But aside from George Hill, I think what Ty Lue has learned is those guys that my front office traded for, Rodney Hood, who was
trash,
1 for 5 and a -3, Clarkson and Nance, who was a DNP CD. I don't need them. I'm going to roll with the guys who have hit big shots and big playoff moments before. And are they aging and do they struggle, some of them, defensively at times? Yeah. But the guys who were brought in to energize this team aren't giving me all that much energy. So I'm just going to roll with the heads that know what playoff basketball is about. And they did tonight.
I thought that when LeBron made the comments after Game 7 about how he was tired, and yes, he might be tired, he might be telling the truth, but I thought that was almost LeBron James because he's going Zero Dark 23 and he can't go subtweet people on social media. I thought that was his version of the subtweet saying to his teammates, listen, you can't shoot 31%. You can't all be terrible. We can't have only one guy, Kevin Love, average double-digit points in the series. Other people need to step up. And again, you're right. It was veterans. It was guys who have been there before who have seen that formula work, and they all came through, and LeBron got them involved, and it worked out for them. Because again, yeah, Jeff Green, Tristan Thompson, J.R. Smith, Kyle Korver, all in double digits tonight. Four guys who really struggled in the last series. And yeah, the Raptors got to take those guys away, but I don't think you're going to get too many gifts where, again, you had the benefit of rest. You had a tired LeBron. You played LeBron well. He didn't have his strongest game. I know, again, he's the triple-double and the incredible play for some stretches, but from what we've seen in that Pacers series, like, LeBron James can play a lot better than he did tonight. And you caught him at the right time, and you weren't able to capitalize.
His Zero Dark 23 is a fake one this year. He's still putting stuff on Instagram stories.
Oh, is he?
Like, that still counts, LeBron.
Oh, yeah.
Just because it's not on your actual Instagram feed.
Yeah, that absolutely counts.
That's a diet, Zero Dark 23.
That absolutely counts. But yeah, a couple of things. So I want to just quickly hit on, before we get to some of the other stuff and before we get to some of the people, the plays at the end of the game, because people were looking for a flagrant foul on Kevin Love, which should have put the Raptors at the line and then keep the ball. I actually think it was a wash because DeMar DeRozan was all over Kevin Love and there was no call. He should have been called for a foul a lot earlier. And I know that, hey, listen, you got to call it as it is, but I'm not sure as to why they didn't go review it, but it was really hard for me to overly complain about that when, yeah, DeRozan's draped all over him and Kevin Love's not getting a foul call. Like, I thought the Raptors got a break on that already.
I agree. I think it was probably fair the way it was adjudicated,
but all the things that get reviewed,
but it's weird because, for one, DeMar's reaching in, which is why he got caught with the elbow. So if you're not going to call him for the reach in, and you didn't see that evidently, or you didn't think it was egregious enough, well, then when Kevin Love hits him with the elbow, and elbows to the head is something that you've mandated as something you're concerned about from a player safety standpoint, how are you not looking at it? I think it ended up turning out properly because, as you pointed out, Kevin Love is just turning, trying to protect the ball. He doesn't know DeMar is there. It's not his fault. If you would have called the foul, and DeMar is just digging in there because he's trying to tie him up for a jump ball.
So do you think they should have reviewed it?
By the letter of the law, they probably should have, but if I'm a Cavs fan, I'm saying it shouldn't have been a foul in the first place. Yeah. And I hear that as well.
Yeah. So again, I think that one's a draw. If they're going to call it that way, they probably should have reviewed it, but ultimately tough for me to be disappointed. Last one for me anyways, the way that the final play was decided, where the Raptors played for the win instead of the bucket and the potential stop or play for a miss. And then you send them to the free throw line and try to tie it with a three. You like that decision?
I think you go early and give yourself a chance on the boards.
Especially since maybe the way LeBron James is shooting free throws, that you can get the ball to him and put him on the stripe.
Well, just especially because you're not hitting anything from the field.
Yeah.
So if they make a shot to win it, we're not talking about it. But if you asked me going into the possession what I would have preferred, that's what I would have said.
Yeah, I'm okay with it. I'm not second guessing it because I think that to go to try to play to potentially go to another overtime, even though the Raptors were getting stops and they were playing well on defense. Yeah, I think that they had to try, or that not that they had to, but trying to win it makes some sense to me. Is this the worst loss in Raptors history? Do you put this past Vince Carter, the graduation game? Because to me, I actually do, because I think that the expectations this time around and the recent history, like there are different factors at play. Like, yeah, the Raptors, that was an elimination game and this was not, and there still is a series to be played. But I got to say, man, I think it's the worst Raptors loss of all time, considering the way that you've been bullied by Cleveland. They've knocked you out. They're 2-8 against you in the last two playoffs. LeBron James has come in here and basically run the show for the last couple of seasons. That your superstar players look to get rid of some ghosts. You had this wonderful opportunity in front of you. The world was watching, and you blew it. You flat out blew it. And I don't know, man. Maybe I'm being throwing some recency bias in this, but to me, it's the worst. To me, this is the worst loss in franchise history.
I don't know if I'm going to go there.
So
I don't want to be
the second worst.
I don't know if I'm going to be the millennial and trying to microwave my thoughts and forget about anything that's happened. It's the second round, and it's game one, and we are close to it now because we just watched it. I'm not there yet. I'm not there yet.
I've never felt that bad after a Raptors loss. Ever. Never, ever, ever. Hasn't even come close. You know what? Honestly, like full disclosure.
But that's you've never felt that bad right after someone breaks up with you.
And I hear that.
It's wrong.
And I hear that. And I'll sit on it. But I've never, it wasn't even like for me personally. Like I felt for all the Raptors fans that were down at Jurassic Park and the people that were in that building. Like we were joking around. The t-shirt guys, the last couple of minutes, the t-shirt guys and gals are running around like, doing their thing, like what? Like you want a T-shirt? And it's the final 2 minutes, everyone in that building is like, "Please get out of my face! Please don't talk to me about a free T-shirt right now. I already got one. It came with my seat, and I just don't want to look at it and talk to anyone. I'm sweating from everywhere. I'm sweating from places I didn't know I could sweat from. Just give me some space. Give me a minute here." And you got what? T-shirt? What? Like
how they do that? Have you worked in game ops?
Man, maybe with those moves I can. Okay, but yeah, I don't know, man. I think it was one of the worst. They'll try to regroup. Is the series?
Do you remember Vince being guarded by Aaron McKee for the entire series? Gets to that spot, misses that shot. Do you actively remember that?
Yeah, I do.
I
remember
think
where I was when that shot
worse?
Happened. Yeah, well, I mean, I was a lot younger, and so I think you care about sports in a different way.
I don't know if you're any more mature than you are.
That's fair. I'm here for that. I'm just saying, like, to me, this one, considering all the outside, like, that Raptors team to me didn't have the same level of expectations. Like, it was the peak of one of their their greatest star in franchise history, and I don't want to hear any of that DeRozan stuff, especially after tonight, about who's the best franchise player or not. But I look at this.
Didn't you already say he's the best franchise player?
I mean, he's the best from a longevity standpoint, but he's not the greatest.
Weren't you like the president of that club?
No. That's Alvin Williams is the president of that club.
But didn't you say his jersey should be hoisted first?
It should be, because the way that Vince Carter left. Again, it's more a circumstances thing. Now we're going down a completely different rabbit hole. Either way, it's one of the worst losses in franchise history, and no matter how you shake it, this is a tough one for Raptors fans to wake up with tomorrow morning. We will be back on Thursday. Thanks again to everybody who downloaded our preview with Dave McMenamin. It hit it hit top 100 on all podcasts, top 10 on iTunes for sports. We always really appreciate that. Again, all the comments, like the reason that this happens is it gets pushed up from the comments. It gets pushed up by the 5-star reviews. We love reading them. We love when you come and interact with us on Raptors postgame. The associates, we appreciate you. We love you. You're what gets us through these dark and dreary nights. Thanks again for listening to Free Association on sportsnet.ca.